This week we're joined by Nikki Inskip, and we're going to have a great conversation about Minecraft, Minecraft in education, Minecraft in esports, how my kids are actually learning during the day when they're on Minecraft, even though they don't seem to be when I'm watching them. And we're going to have a chat about basically education and Minecraft. So welcome to the show, Nikki.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and brilliant to have you on. And this is, and it's one of the things I love about the podcast is the different topics that we discuss. But I suppose for anybody tuning in, it would be great for just you to give a bit of background about you and what you do.
Yeah, by all means. So I'm a college lecturer at a sixth form college in Basingstoke, the UK. And my background is in maths teaching and computer science teaching, but I've recently, in the last year or two, got more involved in using game-based learning and using Minecraft, particularly in introducing that into the esports forums, I guess. So we also offer an esports course, BTEC course here at the college. So I have some links with that as well. I run a lot of enrichment activities based around Minecraft, but also have used it in lessons as well.
And I guess, jumping in on that, Minecraft and education, how well do they work together and how interlinked is it all?
With Minecraft as a game itself, there are so many different aspects to the gameplay of it that it enables you to use it in an educational perspective. So, for example, it's very creative. A lot of other games that students play and tend to have a sort of single purpose. So it's either one-on-one, you're fighting against something, or you're trying to win against another player, or you're trying to salvage and kind of look for things in a game. So I'm thinking of games like Fortnite, for example, where you're trying to win, or ones where you're looking for something. So The Witcher, for example. So there are lots of games involve first player shooting or something like that. With Minecraft, it's more, you get the option. You can either forage for things and look for things to help you to build and be creative and kind of survive. So you can have survival mode, or you can just go in with unlimited resources and just create worlds and environments that other people can join in with. And I think that's what allows it to be used for education. So there doesn't have to be a specific goal to the game that is set by the game itself. You set the goal. So you can say, okay, you can set a time limit. You can say, I want you to spend half an hour building this particular topic. So build your ideal bedroom, and you give them a time limit. Or you can say, you need to build something that covers these three objectives. And the way that it's so adaptable to that, I think allows it to be used in education. And that's where the students can be learning more. So they can play it as individuals, and you can get them to do that and then talk about what they've done. So they can work on their communication skills, their presentation skills, or you can ask them to create in teams, and then they can work on their communication within a team and their teamwork skills. So you can focus on different aspects of development by asking them to do something within a game that they're familiar with. That's just a bit more fun. And that's what game-based learning theory is really all about. But Minecraft just really lends itself very well to that.
And I guess, so many questions really, but like, you look at like the survivor mode, and I get it working in a team and giving a task, it creates that level of interaction, I guess, And I mean, from a student perspective, I mean, how do they embrace this? I imagine they love it because, they're getting to play Minecraft during school. It feels like a holiday in a way. But do they understand the structured element, or do they kind of see it as, oh, yes, I get to play Minecraft, for example?
You have to approach, I guess, if you're going to use it in education, you have to approach it from giving them the opportunity to have some freedom in it, but also giving them some structure. So Minecraft, the Minecraft Education Edition that Microsoft have developed, there are some pre-prescribed lessons within that you can use that have specific goals, specific purposes. But the advice when you're using them is always have the students work on the task and the activity with the kind of carrot, I suppose, dangling that after they've done that, they will get some free time, creative time within it where they can just free play. And then they can choose to either do it in survival mode, they can work with other people, they can just create their own thing, be creative. So the draw with them of using it in lessons is really that not only are they doing something that they consider fun, something they're used to, something that for a lot of the students that I teach, where I'm 16 to 18. So for them, some of them are like, oh, I haven't played Minecraft for years, or they're very much into the PvP Minecraft, the more competitive Minecraft. And so for them, it gives an opportunity to do something they're familiar with, something that they enjoyed. But the hook, I suppose, is like, okay, do this structured activity, get something out of it, and then you can have that free play afterwards. And it allows for that diversity within one game. And the Minecraft Education Edition also allows for that. So, but in a safe environment. So they're only doing it within their organization and they're not online with people outside of the organization.
Okay, really interesting, very protective. And again, just on that, I mean, what age do the kids, start using Minecraft Education? I mean, I know you mentioned 16 to 18 as your group, but in general,
I think as long as your organisation has got the ability to have the licences, it can be used from any age group. So they're using it in primary education for key stage one, key stage two. So the lessons are designed to be used with that age group, and then anything above that, really. So it can be used from any age where they are able to use PCs and kind of navigate around. Programs. It can be used really from primary upwards. And I know that they've started to, that there are some employees in Microsoft that are looking at designing or mapping to the UK-based curriculum, the Key Stage 2 curriculum, mapping some of the activities to say, actually, when you're teaching this topic in mathematics, for example, this is a great activity to use, a great lesson to use, to try and introduce it, not so that they're using it consistently, but that they're using it as a tool within teaching. So there's a lot of curriculum mapping with it at the lower levels. And I think that we'll see that map through to Key Stage 3, Key Stage 4 eventually. It just depends on what area of the curriculum you're looking at. Yeah. So there's lessons designed for all different topics.
And I mean, look, you know, a school teacher listening in, I mean, how did you, make the decision as a college, to kind of, introduce gamified learning or game-based learning into the curriculum? Were you the driver within that? Was it a school system? What was that journey like?
So for me, I've only recently started teaching computer science more than I've taught maths. And it was because I had the facilities, the PCs in the room as part of my teaching tools. I started to look at other ways of introducing coding, for example, or getting students that weren't familiar with code to practice their coding skills. So Minecraft for Education have actually developed quite a lot of lessons that are based around Python coding or block coding. And Python is the language that we teach at A-level. So some of our students come in being very confident programmers. Some of them come in never having coded before. And we have to kind of teach them simultaneously. So I started looking at some of the lesson ideas and some of the ways that they were introducing coding through Minecraft. And that's really, those lessons to me really appealed because the students who were familiar with it could just get on and really show off their skills in that. Whereas students who weren't familiar could learn from it, but they could work on it at the same time. So it was new enough. There was a familiar environment in Minecraft, but it was new enough that they could learn it quickly if they didn't already know it, or they could kind of show their skills and use skills they already had if they did. But it was a common ground for them to work in, and they could do it collaboratively or they could do it individually. So I started to look at those lessons, and then because we have a Microsoft license, 365 license in school, we have Minecraft Education as part of our package. So it was something that I thought, well, why not try and make use of it? So I've tested out a few things in some of the lessons, and the students have responded really well. They, even if they're not Minecraft players, they enjoyed the fact that it was different to just sitting and writing code. It was a way of kind of experimenting with it.
Yeah, and I mean, look, teenage kids don't tell their parents too much of what's going on in life, but I know that if I said to my child, like, how was school today? Yeah, great. Spent it on Minecraft. I mean, how have you found parents' reception to this? I'm sure it's going to be a very mixed bag. You know, some that are very open to it, some that are not. But doesn't matter in a way once the kids are developing, I guess.
Some parents have questioned it and have said, I don't see how this is different from when they come home and they just spend 3 hours with their friends on Minecraft. But the being able to share with them some of the kind of the structure that's in from the education edition. So a lot of parents, what their experience of Minecraft is for their children, if they have any, is that they it's the Java version. So they go onto Minecraft, they're just building things, they're doing their own thing, and they're just playing around with what's in there. There's no structure to it. So having then the opportunity to show them within the education edition that actually these are activities that have instructions in them, and there are things that there are objectives to achieve, there are things that they have to do to kind of complete it. So I think having that inbuilt structure, being able to demonstrate that to them, and then saying, okay, actually that's not just them playing in Minecraft, they're actually learning about a particular topic, or they're interacting with different aspects of the game. I think being able to demonstrate that is the most powerful thing for parents. So kind of introducing it to them, being able to show them what they're doing, that's really helped. And then they've gone away thinking, well, actually, this isn't just Minecraft now. This isn't just playing a game. And for some of them, they didn't really even understand what Minecraft was as a game. They just knew that their children played it. So it's been really powerful. And I think once they see how it links to the curriculum, once they see how structured it can be, that they were much happier about the idea of them using in lessons. And plus, we're not doing it for an entire lesson. It's an activity within it. So, and it's not done every lesson either.
Yeah, no, it sounds incredible. So, I mean, we've got teacher buy-in, pupil buy-in, school buy-in. We've got parents' education. So, I mean, we're ticking all the boxes on how, you know, something should be integrated, which I think is fascinating. But, you know, and it's great that, you know, as a school, you're kind of in a fortunate position, I guess, to have these licenses, to have the facilities. Like, is this something, and, you know, I'm going to plead ignorance here now, but like, is this something that's widespread across schools across the UK? Is this a project in isolation? Should it be, you know, widespread across schools? And I assume the barriers are the main barriers that we're thinking about.
So there are a number of schools in the UK that are introducing it and experimenting with it and starting to build it into the curriculum, but it's certainly not something that's widespread yet. I think within each of the UK countries, so I know there's a big team of teachers in Wales, for example, who are all looking at embedding Minecraft into their curriculum practice. There's a huge community of teachers out there we're all linked together on Twitter and various other platforms where we're sharing ideas. People are experimenting, creating their own lessons and worlds, and really demonstrating how it can be used. So it's definitely not something that every school has taken on yet, but there's a growing number of schools that are looking at it, particularly schools who already have the ability to be able to use it within their Microsoft licenses they already have. Lots of schools are looking at it. And there's a lot of learning tools and teacher kind of courses that you can look at free online where you can look at how you can embed Minecraft. So I think it's growing. I think the big explosion in the esports industry and that coming to the forefront through the pandemic has made people more aware of these things, more aware of the tools that they can use. And I think what's quite interesting with Minecraft is that it's not considered an esports game traditionally, and yet the explosion of that industry has highlighted its use in education and been able to enable people to really look at how they can get students, because it's something they can use at home, how they can get students to kind of really make use of it in a positive way. So Minecraft's an interesting game, really, because of that.
It's absolutely fascinating to hear it all and to see, you know, the kind of development and the, you know, the thought leadership that's going into this, you know, and, you know, it's interesting about, you know, how, you know, it seems to be kind of almost teacher led, you know, in a way where teachers are looking for different mechanisms, I guess, to, you know, to keep students, you know, engaged, which I guess is the challenge. And it's looking to kind of almost tap into the culture that exists as well amongst youths today, you know, and how, you know, and I suppose it's how learning has evolved as well.
Definitely. And I think the interesting part with Minecraft is that there's the other side to it. So there's the competitive side to Minecraft. So in the education side, really, you want to focus on the creativity and the collaboration and the learning from it. But the other side of Minecraft, and that's the side that we've been developing in our college more, is the competitive side. So where it's not traditionally an esports game, it's not a game where you can kind of win or lose. There is we have developed our own server. We've built our own server. We've developed a map and we're trying to set up a league. We're calling it the Minecraft Collegiate League, where students can actually explore more of the competitive side. But what that's enabled us to do, because of the design of Minecraft, because being a sandbox game and not having a kind of an end goal to it, means that they can keep creating the worlds that they play these games on. So I don't know how much you know about Minecraft kind of as a competitive game, but there's a server, Hypixel is the main server that most people play competitively on. They have a series of mini games you can play. You compete against other people, and it's very much a you join a game, you play, and then you leave the game again. So there's no real kind of league structure to it, and that's why it's not being used as an esports game. So what we've created is a standardized world map with three different games in. Other colleges are doing the same thing, and then what we're going to do is play a kind of almost like you do in football, a home and away kind of league set up, so that we play on each other's servers, we play the same games that they're standardized in some way, and then we score points for that. And there's a kind of a league table. And that at the moment doesn't exist. And what we're trying to do really is give students a way of being able to compete in a game that they're comfortable in. But at the same time, they can be involved in the creative side of it, because they have to build the maps on their own servers. They have to create those maps before they can play on them. They're not pre-created in the game itself. Yeah, it's a really interesting project.
Absolutely. Can you imagine being told to go out and build a football pitch for your football game? I mean, it's
right.
It's really, you know, it's got the students at the core of it, you know, and
yeah, they've been the motivation the whole time. They were the ones that asked to do it. They said, "Can we do something with Minecraft? Can we start a Minecraft club? Can we start this competitive world? Can we build our own server?" This all came from them. I knew nothing about it until they introduced me to it. I've just been the one that's facilitated them being able to do it. So, and in terms of keeping students safe, so there's quite a lot of talk about students being exposed to different toxic environments within esports and gaming and online environments, and parents obviously are worried about keeping their children safe online. So what Minecraft has enabled us to do, because it's so creative in what we do, that it's enabled us to provide an environment that is safe for students, so we can restrict who has access to those things, to those servers. We can restrict, and with the education version, you can restrict it just to your organization itself. And so it's providing safety, but also you find there's less toxicity, because people are people in Minecraft tend to be the sort of people that want to express themselves in and not they. I don't really know how to describe it, but it's definitely more open to diversity, shall we say, and more inclusive as a game and as a community. So you find that a lot of people can build their own avatars, so they can kind of create their own identity in Minecraft and be themselves without fear of being kind of ridiculed in some way. So we have a lot of our LGBTQ plus community within college. They are Minecraft players. Lots of our foundation learning students, our entry-level students who have learning difficulties, they are also Minecraft players. And the majority of the students that come and do that and are involved in it are from those groups, from those that identify in that way. So then it allows those groups to come together and really work together on it. So yeah, there's a lot to it.
Absolutely. It sounds like it. And it's great that, you know, and we're going to get to it, but the diversity aspect of it, you know, and, you know, I suppose it's funny from a podcast point of view, you know, I say it's funny a lot. It's not funny, haha, but it's like, the reason how we got chatting is putting a call out to get more females talking about their experience in esports, because there is a fear that these things, you know, become male dominated, says the male hosting a podcast, but it does lend itself kind of, you know, very much so to like, you look at titles like FIFA, you look at titles like League of Legends, Call of Duty, you know, they're very heavy on the esports side of things, they're very heavily male dominated.
Yes.
You know, and then maybe on the content creator side, they can be sexualized a bit, you know, where females are participants, you know. But really, like, and you kind of hit the nail on the head in the last kind of segment, like, esports should be, physicality doesn't come into it. You know, it's about logical thinking. It's about movement, you know, dexterity in hands. So it should be really inclusive. And it's amazing that it hasn't in a way. So it's good to hear that Minecraft has that inclusive element to it.
Yeah, and I'd like, because of the creative side of it as well. So you don't just have to be good at kind of competing. And so I know obviously most traditional esports games, you have to practice. It's like any sport, I suppose. You have to have a certain skill level. With Minecraft, the skill level is, it depends on what aspect of it you're using. So if you're being creative, there is the skill is in how is what you create in your imagination, because you can create it in your own time, at your own pace. There are different tools that allow you to create within Minecraft. So you can either create by coding things or you can just create by placing blocks. So it allows anyone with any kind of disability to access it, because it's not important to be like other sports. You don't have to be able to move physically or even from a learning point of view. If you're learning impaired, actually you can still do things in it, because most of the movements and commands are basic ones. And once you've learned those, it's about how you then interpret it and how you create within it. So it allows for all of that, but also for, you were saying about the male domination in traditional esports games. I would say more than 50% of our Minecrafters in college, of our Minecraft groups, are females or identify as female. And that's actually really important to us here at college, because it's one of the few places where that it's not dominated by males. There are males within the groups, of course, but it tends to be at least 50-50, if not more.
And how did you put that structure in place, Nikki?
So I, to be honest, I just put, I had a few students come to me, and there were three males and two females in the original group that came to me and asked if they could do it. I just put a call out and said, anyone who's interested in Minecraft, who is creative in Minecraft, wants to compete. And it just happened that the majority of them were female that came forward, that have stayed on the project. So it wasn't even like we had to kind of really push getting females interested. They were just already out there.
Absolutely amazing. And I have a feeling we could go all day and chatting about this all day and all night. But
yeah.
But one final thing, I guess, like in terms of looking at game-based learning, Minecraft, I mean, what do you see as the key skills that are developed? I know you mentioned a few about working in some teams and working on creative elements, but what else, other benefits do you see of coming from that?
Yeah, so I think the different ways so there are different aspects of STEM that you could introduce using Minecraft. So the concepts you can introduce using Minecraft, but actually a lot of the gameplay that's already built into the game. So for example, redstone block use, redstone mining in Minecraft is where you're using logic gates and able to create almost physics-based experiments. So I know a teacher that at the moment is trying to create physics lessons around using Minecraft for education, using the block placement and using the logic gates, and being able to introduce concepts. But because you can visualize, because it's a very visual game and a very physical game, it allows for you to really incorporate lots of different STEM subjects just within it. And I think it's very powerful for STEM learning, but also from the creative side in terms of coding and other things. So I really think the way the game was designed in the first place actually lends itself to the STEM learning subjects more than any other game might. And that's the thing with sandbox games, because they are creative and there's no kind of end to it. They're unlimited in what you can do. It allows for that. I think it's a very powerful tool, and I think we're going to see it used more and more in the future.
Yeah, Nikki, that's been absolutely fascinating. I almost feel privileged, because I'm going to be more intelligent than everybody else because I get to hear this before it goes live. So thanks so much for coming on, and
no worries, really, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.